how do we make people feel important, valuable, and that they're getting value so that, for the sake of the business model, they are continuing to renew memberships, they are continuing to pay for events, they are continuing to engage in the community, right? So we did that very physically in person for all of those years. And really what I did with Biz Women of Rock is take the best of the best of what I learned and translate that into an online format.
Welcome to the Influence and Scale podcast, where content creators, marketers, and entrepreneurs learn how to increase their influence and scale their business using content marketing. My name is Tyler Basu, and alongside my business partner, Chuck Anderson, we'll be sharing proven strategies to help you grow your audience, create great content, and generate more traffic, leads, and sales for your business. Thanks so much for joining us. Now let's dive in. What's up? This is Tyler Basu here. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. Today, we are diving into the topic of how to build a thriving community around your brand and around your business. And I've brought on a special guest who I think is setting a phenomenal example in this area. Her name is Katie Kremitzo. She's the founder of a company and a brand called Biz Women Rock, which began as an online community consisting mainly of free content in the form of her podcast, but evolved into this online hub of thousands of entrepreneurs that support each other and that she supports through various products and services. And so out of building a community around this brand and around this message of supporting women in business, she built a business by supporting that very community. And so we're going to dive deep into that topic of how you can build an audience online and make that audience feel like they're a part of your brand, feel like they're a part of your community, and have them become a source of your ideas for products and services that you can provide to them to help them to accomplish their goals. So on that note, we're going to jump right in. This is Katie Kremitzos from bizwomanrock.com. Well, Katie, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast today. I'm really excited to chat with you.
Tyler, thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited.
So I've given the listeners just a little bit of insight into what you're up to, but if you could take us back to when you first became an entrepreneur, like how did that happen? Why did you get into business? Why did you decide to be an entrepreneur?
So it's worth noting that I didn't grow up around entrepreneurship. I didn't even know what that word was or that it existed until I was probably about 22. And when I learned that word, it was because I started working for a woman who owned her own business, and she worked out of the home. She was a writer, she was an editor, and I just was sort of her assistant. And it was the first time that I saw, like, oh my gosh, you could own your own business and kind of have a schedule that you get to create. Like, it was just the coolest thing to me. But I didn't do anything with it other than sort of file that away and say, okay, that sounds really cool. And then I was, you know, grad school into job number one, job number two, job number three. And I was working in corporate and just not, I wouldn't say I was miserable, but it just was, nothing was a fit. And I sort of had told myself, okay, well, all I need to do is find the dream job and then that will make me happy. And after only three jobs, I was like, okay, maybe there's not such a thing called a dream job. And if there is, I don't think I want to spend another two decades climbing up the ladder to find it. So I was like, oh, okay, what am I going to do? And I just started asking myself the question, like, what have I always really loved doing? And I have always loved writing. I've always been really passionate about women. And so I started writing a book. And I just wrote... True to sort of how I work, I wrote about what was sort of kind of the theme of whatever what was happening in my life at that time. So it was all about finding true love. It's not worth talking about the book because it's horrible, but it was a poignant book because this was back in 2008.
Yeah,
and it was a poignant book because I chose to self-publish it. I put it online, and I did with a lot of we ignorant first-time entrepreneurs do is we create the product and then think that everyone's going to come. Like, if you build it, they will come, right? And so after 30 days when I had like one sale, I was like, I probably should learn this business thing. I should probably learn a little bit more about how this business thing works. And I was still working my day job, and thus enter Chris Kremitzos, my then I had a crush on this man, then turned boyfriend, co-owner of the company that we ran for many years together, now husband. And when I met him, he had just started an entrepreneurs association. And so I was just, I started like going to meetings, going like, I need to learn a little bit more about this. And the story does not end with me being the writer and everything going great and learning everything I need to do. But it started my entrepreneurial journey, because what ended up happening was that I fell in love with him. I quit my job just because I was miserable. And I was like, I just kind of want to do this thing. I want to do something on my own full time and I'll figure it out. And then I realized like a month into it, I was like, this is definitely going to take longer than what I have planned savings wise. So, hey, Chris, why don't I just help you with your business? Because you've got a working business model already. And in my head back in those days, that meant faster to income that could support me. Right. And so I jumped into his business. And so he and I co-ran that company from, it started in 2008. I jumped in 2009, and then, I left it in 2016. So that was my first jump into it.
Got it. Okay. Very cool. And, so when did Bizwoman Rock, start, and tell us about like how that started, why you created it?
Yeah. So over my involvement with Tampa Bay Business Owners, I just fell in love with entrepreneurship. I fell in love with entrepreneurs. I fell in love with this whole community of people who completely lived their lives outside of the traditional blue collar box that I had always grown up in, you know, that most of us grew up in, which was go to school, get a job, build a career, have babies, get married, all that good stuff, in whatever order you want to put that in. And so all of a sudden I had spent all these years surrounded by people who created the life that they really wanted, and they did it through this vehicle of business. And so it's just worth noting that I just fell in love with it. And again, kind of reverting back to this passion I had always had for women, somewhere, I think it was mid 2013, we had brought in one of the things that we did for this group is we curated education, generally pretty innovative education, social media, you know, kind of like what's coming up, how business is transforming, just how to stay on top of business. And one of the educators that we brought in talked about podcasting. And it was the first time I had ever heard about podcasting, and my ears just perked up, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is like doing what we do, but it can take it global. Like, oh my God, like this medium can help bring a message and facilitate community and love and education and passion, like seriously on a global scale. And it just blew my mind. And so I started concocting an idea about like, okay, what if I take these two passions that I have, this of entrepreneurship and women, and what if I create a podcast for these women? And so in early 2014 is when I launched Biz Women Rock, honestly, with a stinking idea of what I was going to do other than, well, let me just interview women who have run through the gauntlet of business and have had some wisdom to share about that, you know, like have some ups to share, downs to share, strategies that they could share. And let me just start having these conversations. And so that's how it all started. And at this time, we're about 4.5 years later, so it's still going.
Very cool. So it started as a podcast. The podcast became a community of people of guests on your show that are now part of your network, and of course, listeners to the show as well. What takes up most of your time today? Like, what are you focused on today, and how has Biz Woman Rock evolved from just the podcast initially?
Yeah. So a very practical thing that I did is, it must have been about a month after I launched the podcast, I opened up a private Facebook group, and I just started asking. I had a really thriving Facebook page at the time. I had a really thriving, like, kind of a grassroots community of people who were like, yes, we're on board with you, Katie. And so they came on board for the podcast and everything that I was doing. And so I said, okay, I want to open this Facebook group and let's just all gather in there. And this was in 2014. So Facebook groups back then were kind of few and far between. They were not really being used strategically for business back then at all. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to use this group as an opportunity to bring those listeners together to talk to them in like real time, because you don't get that opportunity on a podcast. And And it could be a great marketing tool because I can market this group, and there are people who would be attracted to this group, to the community that happens in there, to the private space of how we can share together and support one another, and may not know about the podcast yet. So I can make sure to share with them about the podcast. So that one move really established, took my brand, if you will, of a podcast, which I would consider like one-dimensional in those days, to like multidimensional all of a sudden, because now I was like really putting my arms around the listeners and the people who had the potential to listen. So over these years, what it's done is I really say that time, the podcast in this group, like gave birth to a whole business for me, because you know, it wasn't just a podcast anymore. It was really a business. And so I spent a long time. I'm apparently a slow learner. I spent like 2.5 years trying to figure out what the heck that business was.
Right.
Very, very unsuccessfully. And so it's now been about 2 years that the current business model is that I act as a community leader, i.e. somebody who manages the group, the listenership, all that sort of stuff. And then I provide resources and support that help these businesswomen grow in a purposeful way. So that looks like I do one-on-one coaching and strategizing for clients. I run masterminds for women who, for a set period of time over the course of 6 months or a year, really want to make some major shifts in what they're doing. I provide online and live events for these women on a as-needed basis for, again, just to help them really focus in on how they're growing in a meaningful and intentional way.
And just out of curiosity, did you ever circle back and market that first book that you wrote after you had learned all these skills, or is that kind of tucked away?
It's so tucked away. And the funny thing is, you know, I did a talk about this recently about sort of like the journey, right? And how all these little steps that we take along the journey, like I can look back and say, oh my God, I have so many incomplete projects or incomplete things, right? And what would happen is I would halfway through or whatever, I'd be like, nope, this isn't it, next thing. And so, yes, I did try, once I had enough savvy, like after a year of being involved with the local community and really learning business, I definitely went back and tried to rewrite the book. I tried to like repurpose it a little bit, and the time was done. Like the season was over. And the funny thing is though, is now back then through me trying to do stuff, like when I first started, I was doing a lot of video content marketing. And I looked back recently at some of those videos. I have like 5,000, 6,000 views on some of those. I was like, dang, that's awesome. I don't think I could pull that off out of the gate now. So, you know, it's just really cool to see okay, well, that worked, but the season's over, and it's sort of like, it's time, you know?
Yeah, I totally get that. And what I really appreciate about the more recent part of your journey of building, you know, starting the podcast and building a community is you spent a few years building the audience and building the community. And from that developed certain like products and services and resources based on the needs of that community, versus the opposite approach of creating something that you think you might be interesting or helpful to other people, and then realizing that perhaps nobody, either you didn't have a way to tell other people about it, or they weren't able to find it on their own. And I know for sure a lot of entrepreneurs make that mistake.
Oh, for sure. I've done it too. Like that was part of those 2.5 years of kind of like experimenting. Like, I would love this type of a thing, so I'm going to put it out there. And like one person buys it. And I was like, okay, apparently no one else wants that.
Right.
You know? So I definitely learned the hard way of like, really listen. Like what are they complaining about? Like, what are they asking for? What are they constantly talking about? And how can I be a resource for them since I'm already here in front of them and they already know, love, and trust my brand and me, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So if we could speak to, you know, the importance of building community around a business, and I know that you've done this both online and offline, like you were part of, you know, the networking groups and building community of entrepreneurs locally. So you've done this in kind of the offline and the online world, but what have you been able to do as a result of having a community around your brand and around your interests that perhaps you couldn't have done without it?
Oh, I love this topic. So I, you know, was part of Tampa Bay Business Owners, the local group, literally that was like what we specialized in, was building community. And if you had to break it down to what that meant, it was like, how do we make people feel important, valuable, and that they're getting value so that for the sake of the business model, they are continuing to renew memberships. They are continuing to pay for events. They are continuing to engage in the community, right? So we did that very physically in person for all of those years. And really what I did with Biz Women of Rock is take the best of the best of what I learned and translate that into an online format. And, you know, I guess the reason why it was, well, I'll give, this is a perfect example. I, you know, mentioned the fact that I had this really great grassroots group of people supporting me. So after all those years of building and spending the time and energy to build these relationships and build community around that business, Tampa Bay Business Owners, they're the ones who helped me launch my podcast, because with them, Chris and myself both were asking like, hey, would you support my podcast when it launches? And if so, put your email address here. Like, seriously, old school, we're at an event, 100 people in the room. Hey, sign this form. Put your name and email address here if you want to support, which means that I'm going to be sending you an email to show you how you can download my podcast and rate and review it and share it with other people. So we literally had a whole grassroots campaign to help me leverage the goodwill that I had with that community to help me launch Biz Women Rock, right? So and the same vein holds true for Biz Women Rock. It's that through that group, through email, through the podcast, I'm constantly experimenting with ways to take that person who's a social media face and extract them from social media, because I have an online business, right? How can I extract them from that social media profile? How can I make them a real person and make them matter to my brand and make them matter in the eyes of me so that they feel special, they feel heard, and they feel supported in the way that my brand is promising to support them. So I'm just constantly experimenting with that. And again, just one tiny example is that, you know, like I'll put out calls to action in my group saying, hey, I'm putting on a particular series. Like I'm putting on a Master Your Money series. I would love to know your thoughts on this particular thing of money. And so people will comment, and then I'll one by one, I'll reach out to them and say, hey, I would love for you to call in so that I can feature you on the podcast. And I will, you know, I'll accumulate 10 to 20 women who will each say their piece about a particular topic. And I will spread that out throughout a particular podcast episode or series. And so the community itself is being represented on the podcast. So it's just like little stuff like that, that I'm constantly thinking, like, how can I make each individual feel really important and inclusive and part of this community and intertwine them and connect them together. And so, yes, getting back to your question is like, that is vital, because if I continue to weave that web, if you will, then it supports me no matter where I go, because I'm giving it love and I'm giving each of those individuals love and connecting them to each other. I can't tell you how many women, because of Biz Women Rock community, have become friends, go and hang out with each other because they happen to be in the same area. Like they become, you know, accountability partners online. Like they become integral parts of each other's lives. And that makes me incredibly happy.
That's so cool. And I can definitely see like the value in involving people in your content. And that was actually going to be my next topic I wanted to touch on is content creation, because I know that you've put out written content, you've put out podcast episodes, you've put out videos, and I was curious, to what extent has your community helped provide you with insights and ideas and topics that would be of value to them? Like, is there a feedback loop of any kind that's giving you these? Because you've put out so much content, yeah. And you, one of the biggest concerns that content creators have is, well, what if I run out of topic ideas, or what if I, you know, run out of things to say? And I think that you having the community has literally become a source of content ideas and inspiration in a way. Would you say that that's mostly true?
Absolutely. I will add though that I think that that's one side of the coin.
Okay.
And that's huge. And do I have like a formalized, organized, automated way to do that? No. And I probably could have at this point, I really sort of do it on my gut. Like, you know, I tend to plan, for example, podcast content and sort of like content in general about 3 months in advance. And so I'll say, okay, Is there a particular series? Is there a particular topic? Is there a particular type of person that my community wants to hear from? And so, and what are they asking for, right? And what are they needing right now? And so, yeah, so during those times, like one of the things, that one side of the coin, is that me constantly digging in and asking. And it might be, it might show up this way, which is a little less broad, a little less to the masses, but it might show up that, you know, back to back coaching clients are talking about this topic over and over and over and over. And so, okay, well, let me write a piece on that. Let me create a podcast episode about that. Let's dive into that deeper. Let's do a Facebook Live about that. And so there's always stuff to draw from that well, you know, so, and there's always ways to access that, that are formal and informal. The other side of the coin though, and this is, I don't know if this is true for everyone, but I would like to think it is. For me, though, so much of me and my brand is about me and my journey. I mean, it's not the Katie Show by any means, but I am incredibly integrated with my brand. I am that leader who simultaneously wants to share wisdom and expertise and will also show you what's going on in my own business in this particular season. So the other side of content creation is also what's going on with me right now that I'm having a challenge with, an idea about, or am struggling with. And I feel like if I'm brave enough to share it in an authentic way that is powerful and enlightening and ultimately gives value and uplifts, then I've got to believe, because I'm just like my community members, like I am my avatar. So I've got to believe that there are other women out there who are also experiencing this. And so that's where a lot, in equal parts, like I'm driven for content from both of those pools, if you will, because A, my journey ain't ever stopping. So I'm constantly pulling from like what's going on in my life and how, oh my gosh, I'm dealing with this giant fear thing because I'm about to do something big and it's terrifying. I could totally, you know, speak to that and share a piece of wisdom about that and be really honest about what's going on with me about it. And simultaneously, hey, what is everyone else going through? So yeah, there's no such thing as, you know, drying up content.
No, that's great. I appreciate that. So it's kind of a mix of your own experience. And also if you notice a pattern or you notice the same questions popping up among that community, you'll go and tackle that topic and maybe find someone in an interview or share your own thoughts on it and so on.
Yep.
Cool. On the topic of pre-selling, and by pre-selling, I mean, you know, trying to get customers for something before you create what that something is, you know, whether it's a product or a service. Is there an example of you doing that, like you creating something specifically because you knew the demand was there, or even the reverse? Like, have you saved yourself the time and headache of creating something that nobody wants based on there not being enough interest in the community? Like, has either scenario occurred for you?
Absolutely, both have. Yes. So I'll give you a couple of examples. I have a paid membership community called the Biz Women Rock Academy, and it's a special community of sort of like the top ladies in my community, the most active, the ones who are constantly being plugged into my brand and what's going on. And I'm constantly curating specialized content for them, whether it's me kind of giving them some extra stuff going behind the scenes, or definitely curating specialized experts coming in and a lot of good stuff. And I had the idea that I wanted to launch a paid membership group very early on, but I was terrified to do it. And then at PodFest, I started mentioning it to a couple of the ladies that were there who are part of my community. And right away, four of them were like, I'm in. Just tell me when you're going to launch it. I was like, okay. So that was like a kind of a backhanded, like, yeah, Katie, you got people who are on board. So I use that as okay, yes, I've got people who will say yes here. So now I feel confident that I can do it. So now let me just go market the heck out of it and create a marketing plan for it. The opposite example is that, so I run one of the resources that I provide are masterminds. And so I have two masterminds that are running currently. So, they're both 6-month masterminds. And back in, March, I was like, oh my gosh, why do I need to wait until July to start another 6-month mastermind? Why don't I just do another one now? And I think that I can get, like, you know, my masterminds are incredibly intimate. So I'm talking 4 to 6 people at max. They're very intimate. So in my head, I'm like, okay, four people, like I could do that, right? And I just, it's worth noting that I was like, I don't, because marketing for a mastermind is incredibly intense, because I have to get X amount of people to apply in order for X amount of people to even be qualified, in order for me to talk to X amount of people and organize personalities in the group. So it's like incredibly intense on the upfront. So I was like, I don't want to do all of that. I'm not going to put it out to my entire community. I'm just going to kind of put it out to a more market and see, and hopefully I can just get it to go. And I spent the entire month of March saying, hey, I'm going to start this mastermind in April. Let's do it, to probably about maybe only about 10 people. And it was the 10 people who have in some way, like they had applied in a different way. They had applied before, that they have given me some indication that they wanted to do it. And to make a very long story short, like half said yes, but they couldn't do it now. The other half said yes, but not, you know, like, I need to wait for another 2 weeks. It just didn't work out. And I was like, okay, I'm going to let that idea go. So, and I could have filled it if I really want to like really go through the marketing for a mastermind thing. But I was like, no, I don't really want to do it right now. So that idea went to the wayside.
Got it. Okay. No, that makes sense. Fair enough. And it sounds like you saved yourself from potentially working extra hard to put something out there that maybe just wasn't the right time for the people that knew about it or whatever the case was. A word that you brought up earlier was accountability. And I think that this is something that's huge, especially for any entrepreneur that's in the business of sharing their expertise, you know, whether they're coach, consultant, course creator, whatever the case is. If they're transferring knowledge to other people in the hopes that those people implement that knowledge and actually get the result that they're hoping for, accountability is a big piece of that. So can you speak to how accountability has shown up in this community that you have around your business? Like, how has that community element increased accountability among your clients, and even perhaps for you, like, you know, knowing that you have a community that is watching your next move, has that perhaps made you more accountable to certain projects or certain goals that you've got?
Okay, both good questions. I'll answer them separately. So accountability for my community and amongst my community, for the programs that I run, there, I should say this, for like the general community at large, there's no really formalized way of holding people accountable or having an accountability structure. I do that every once in a while. Like, I definitely like throw that into the loop of some of the cool, you know, marketing or the posts that are happening in the private group to, you know, just kind of check in on people. Like, hey guys, what are you committed to? What's the one thing you're committed to by the end of this week? And then I literally will, like, everyone who comments on that post on Friday, I call each of them out and I say, great, how did you guys do?
So, like, right on. Yeah.
I mean, just because I want them to feel like I remember them, which I do. I remember them. I thought about them. I wanted to hear about that, about how they did. So there's no, for the general community, no, there's no formal way that I really give tools for accountability. However, for my programs, i.e. the masterminds and my one-on-one coaching, yes, I absolutely include accountability as a part of it. So, you know, masterminds, there are about a gazillion different definitions of masterminds because everyone runs their masterminds very differently. The way that I run my masterminds are incredibly formal. And so over the course of 6 months, I mean, every single week we're checking in on how, you know, every week you're committing to one goal that you're going to hit between now and the next week. And then every week you're checking in on, did you hit that goal? And if, you know, a couple of weeks, it's okay that you don't, but if a couple of weeks pass and you haven't, like, then I'm going to start to be talking to you on an individual basis saying, hey, what happened? How can we support you? Did things change? Did things shift? I am not a believer, nor does my brand, really support this ideal of hustle and goal setting for the sake of hustle and goal setting. So I am, so much of who I show up to be and what my brand is all about is really this holistic version of doing business, which means that when you're having a mastermind and I say, this is the big thing I want to hit by the end of 6 months, and 4 months into it, life changes and something major happens and it all gets blown out of the water. Like, I'm not the person who will try and talk strategy on how to make that 6 month goal happen. Like, I'm not that person. I'm the person who will turn into, like, let's talk about life happening, because that's very real, and that our lives and our businesses are so intricately intertwined. And so there's no way we can pretend that one is not happening. So All of that being said, yes, I mean, just the structure of the showing up every single week for a mastermind group, they have, you know, a private Facebook group where they're, you know, able to check in with one another or whatever kind of support they need throughout that program. My one-on-one clients, I mean, again, just by nature of them showing up either every week or every other week with me, that is showing up as accountability. And I give the level of accountability that my client is asking for. There's some who are asking me and want me to sort of be the hardliner and like, okay, Katie, I really need you to like drive me home on this and please make sure I'm doing this. And so I'll check in like, hey, you said you were going to do that. And today we're not, you're talking all around that. So what's going on? And then there are some who don't need that from me. They need less accountability and more like, okay, I need your strategic brain today. I need like, I just need an ear to listen to the fact that I am hiding under my desk and I don't want to be a CEO today. So what I constantly am doing for my one-on-one clients is really reflecting back to them where they are compared to where they have been in the past. That immediately gives them that sense of like, okay, I'm growing. It doesn't feel like it on these little minute check-ins, these little minute, you know, in the smallness of these times together. But when I look back and look at what happened, where I was last year versus where I am now, it's like, whoa, okay, I'm good. So that's how it shows up in my, like amongst the community. And yes, that is giant. And I will say the people who choose to engage in the programs with me, whether it's a mastermind or one-on-one coaching, they're seeking some level of accountability. They are not doing a good job of accomplishing what they want to accomplish on their own. That's why I've gone out and hired coaches. That's why I've gone out and joined masterminds, you know, because I'm like, I need someone to kind of hold my feet to the fire and force me to do it.
Yeah, for sure. But you customize the level of accountability based on somebody's particular needs.
Totally. Which I think is really, no two people are alike, you know. I have one client who literally like, she's got her stuff down. I mean, like she is good and she doesn't need me to tell her where she is. She doesn't need me to tell her, to remind her to do things. She absolutely doesn't need that. She's got it on her own. What she needs me for mostly is, to check in. Like, I just need to make sure I'm milestoning myself and that like, is there anything I'm not seeing here? And then boom, we can go into like this version, you know? So yeah, it's all across the board. There are no two entrepreneurs alike.
Okay.
So
no, that's great advice. I appreciate that. For entrepreneurs out there that have started building community and maybe it's offline and, you know, like by running, live workshops or networking events and so on, or maybe it's online with a Facebook group or with a LinkedIn group, for example, do you have any tips on helping to guide those members of our community, which is presumably free or at least very inexpensive, guiding them to become clients and perhaps more importantly, some raving fans and some success stories that we can showcase in our business?
Yes, absolutely. I have a couple things that I have learned over the years that I really love following. The first is that I get really clear on how many spots I have available in order to fill whatever, right? And so, you know, if you want to work this out financially, like if you're selling a course, like how many people do you need in your course in order for you to break even? How many people do you need in your course in order for you to bring in this much revenue and that much revenue? Like, what are your milestones there? So you have a real number that you want to achieve and you're translating that out of dollars. You're being money conscious, but you're translating into people. How many people do I really need in this course? So you can concentrate on the people. So again, same thing with one-on-one coaching. Like, okay, well, how many clients? You can't just say like, I want more coaching clients. Like, how many clients do you want? And what does that translate into, right? Same thing with like a small group program, a mastermind, whatever it is. How many people will this take for me to have it a go? So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is I call it a whisper campaign. I do this for just about everything that everything that I've launched over the past 2 years. And the whisper campaign is much, it's sort of what we had talked about before, is I start having one-on-one conversations with people to see where there's interest. And they're generally the people who are the most in tune to my brand. They're generally the most active members of my community. And so I'll just say like, you know, hey, I'm about to have a new mastermind starting in August. It's going to be this. Is this something that you might be interested in? I'm talking to you about it before I'm going public with it. So is this something you'd like to talk about? I generally get a very good response just from that. Because these are people who know me, love me, trust me, have probably experienced some programming before, or if they have not, they're active in my community. So like we have a rapport. So I kind of go through that, that whisper campaign. And from that, that is how I gauge my level of confidence in the program and the level of stickability of whether the program is going to work. Because let's say I have a program, or let's say you want to do a live event and you're talking to a bunch of people, you want to get 100 people there and you're kind of talking around and you start doing a little whisper campaign and, you know, informally you get 20 people to say, absolutely there. I'm there, Katie. Right. I'd be like, dude, I'm doing this. I got it. There's absolutely an interest. Let's go. So it's like a little mini, market research, right? Then what I do is once I sort of have like, okay, I can count on these people for, and by the way, those people don't always translate, but like, it makes me like most of the time that they do, but every once in a while, somebody says yes. And then they don't convert, for 1,000 different reasons. And so then what I do is I formalize a marketing strategy for it. So I say, okay, boom, I know it's going to happen. I know that there are people that there are people that are going to be there that are going to want this. I've done my whisper campaign. I've got my, like, you know, I'm seeding it with these people. Now let me go full force and then blow out a marketing campaign. And so there's a bunch of different ways to do this, but what I always recommend is that you really leverage the platforms that you already have a voice on, a powerful voice on. So where does your community interact with you already? So mine is the podcast. Mine is also the Facebook group and my email list, right? Those are, and my Facebook page. Those are the four most interactive places where my community members live. So how can I be interactive there? And how can I maybe create a whole podcast series just it around the topic that particular program is going to deal with? So we are talking about that particular topic and then boom, I'm saying, hey, here's this program because we're talking about this and I'm launching it on this date. And if you want to sign up, go here and you can be on the waiting list or whatever that is. But just like start to really integrate it and then, you know, start to just really blow out that whole marketing campaign.
Okay, cool. That's a great approach. I like that. Hypothetically, if you had to start a brand new community and a brand new business today, is there anything that you would do differently, or are there any mistakes that you know to avoid now based on your experience these past few years?
Oh, Tyler, of course. So many things I would do differently. Yeah, the very first thing that I would do is I would be a hell of a lot more strategic and intentional with what the business is doing, who it's best for, what it is that people can get from it. You know, like what's the value, and then create strategic marketing based on what actions I want people to take. And that sounds really basic, but I did not do that. The reason I was so good at building community in those first couple of years is because I wasn't intentional with anything. Like I just really was like, I'm just putting out this content. I never really asked myself, like, who is my audience? What do I have for them? Why am I special to them? And what is this? What program, product offering? What is it? Like, I never really did that and then created strategic marketing out of that. I just sort of played, and it's worked out, of course. But so that being said, I would really, you know, everyone thinks like marketing has to be what I call spaghetti on the wall marketing. Like, let me just be everywhere all the time. Let me have this podcast and be on all the social media platforms and be everywhere and blow content out to everyone so I can be seen. And you could do great that way, but it's not necessary to do that. It is so much more impactful and gets more results if you really ask yourself those questions first. Like, who am I? What is this particular program, offering, business, thing? Who is the person who's ideal for it? Where are they? What are they asking for? What are their pains? What are their hopes and dreams? How can I speak to that? And now, knowing all those things, what kind of marketing is going to be meaningful for them? So sometimes that means, and this is definitely like a very practical thing for me, I would I would spend money after I've asked myself those questions. I would spend marketing dollars there, i.e., okay, if I know this next project is going to be big for people who listen to podcasts, I'm going to go spend money on podcast advertising instead of, you know, just trying to be everywhere. So what podcasts have my listeners that would directly benefit from what I have? And I'm going to go become an advertiser with them.
Okay. So the lens that you're operating from is more about who am I trying to reach and like, where are they hanging out? How can I reach them that way versus, oh, let's just try to be everywhere all the time.
Yes.
Which can be not the best use of time or resources for most entrepreneurs, especially if they're just getting started.
Especially if you're just getting started. It is the rarity. It is the rare brand that can be generalists, the very rare brand. And I will say I've not always done a great job of this because you would think, okay, women in business, that's specific, but actually it's not. Like, it's not nearly as specific as what I constantly need to be. So, you know, it's a matter of like chiseling down. Results come when you can really chisel down and be directly to the point of, here's who I am, what my brand's about, here's who you are, and here's how I give value to you. Because we are in a society where as consumers, it's like, do you want to be the billboard where like, I'm just going to see that brand constantly fly by and that's great? Or do you want to be the person who comes up the moment I ask my friend, I'm looking for this thing, I need a resource now, where should I go? That's the kind of consumers that we are nowadays. We are an on-demand, I need this, and who has it? And I'm immediately going to ask my friends who they use, right? Or who they trust, and what group I should join, or what product I should buy, or I'm going to go search, I'm going to do some research. So like, that tends to be the way that we as consumers will spend our money. So wouldn't you rather be strategically in the line of that traffic instead of trying to be everywhere?
Yeah, for sure. That's great advice. And it's counterintuitive because you might think that, if I get more specific, I'm alienating all these people. But what's actually happening is you're becoming the go-to resource or business for that group. And if that's the group you want to work with, then it makes perfect sense to do that.
Yeah.
You've shared a ton of value here. And I want to be respectful of your time. I've got a few quick questions for you. And I want to shift gears. We've covered community quite a bit. And I just want to learn a little bit more about how you run things, how you operate as an entrepreneur. First question for you, though, because you're also married to an entrepreneur. And it's not common for there to be two entrepreneurs in one household, whether they work together or they're running two separate businesses. So do you have any tips for people out there who have a spouse that is also in business? What are some of the unique challenges that have come with that, and some advice if we're facing those challenges?
Yeah, great question. The first piece of advice that I would give is that, you know, Chris and I worked together, co-owned our business for many, many years. And one of the major reasons that I split off to do my thing, he has since split off to do his thing, is because we realized we actually were not good business partners. And there was our business strategist was the guy who married us and is pretty much like our marriage counselor. So like, I mean, if that gives you any indication, it is the very special couple who can do business well together. And it absolutely can happen. Oh my gosh. But like it took so much for us to really work that out and constantly be aware of like, when are we husband and wife and when are we business partners? And in that business partnership, who has the most say here? And there's power differentials. And so it's so, so complicated. So that's just straight up truth. Like, just be honest about like, can you actually be partners with your spouse or not? And if so, there's a whole different, many, many different books to read about that. The second thing is just the dynamics of two entrepreneurs in the household. Circling back to what I said in the very beginning, we live outside of the norm every single day. Like, there's no such thing in my household as a 9-to-5. There's no such thing in my household as, you know, vacation days. You know, Tyler, you and I are talking on Memorial Day weekend. And I'm like, of course I would schedule a podcast, right? right. So, you know, he had a call earlier today. So the first thing is just have, I think there's an incredible amount of acceptance and honoring of each other's values. And I tend to think that it's really nice, actually, that both of us are entrepreneurs because we value the fact that we love business and we love the vehicle of business for making an impact in this world and for doing great things and for fulfilling ourselves and honing in on our gifts. And so Like, we really honor that in one another. And so therefore, it is the rarity. It is the rare time when it will be like, okay, you need to turn off work. Okay, you need to turn off work. Because we get like, okay, like, no, work is very valuable. There's no such thing as like an off time. That doesn't mean it gets bled into everything all the time. It just means like,
right. But it's quite, you know, integrated really, into your lifestyles.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is like, because we live so far outside of the norm, this constant like up and down that can constantly happen as entrepreneurs, like, you know, there's no such thing called a what normal people would see as like stability.
Right.
Like, it's so ridiculous.
There's ups and downs. Yes.
There's so many ups and downs. And so the core of our entire relationship is communication. And that sounds really bland, but what it is constantly talking to each other and checking in about what kind of stuff is important to us and what kind of stability do we have and what kind of stability do we need now and what kind of support do we need now. And it's just a constant like checking in with each other to see who's doing what when. And there are seasons in his business where he's working crazy hours. There are seasons in my business where I'm working crazy hours. There are seasons in both of our businesses where we're not working crazy hours at all. So that's one of the best and most challenging things about it, is that no 2 days look alike. And there's a need for a lot of grace about that and acceptance about that. And like, you know, when all is said and done, like I love this life that feels very just different and adventurous and all over the board sometimes. I would much prefer that than the stable 9-to-5 job, you know, and how was your day, honey? You know, like it doesn't suit us. So I think that there's just a respect for that.
Okay, cool. Are there any like specific systems or tools or things that you're using on a regular basis to help bring a little bit of structure and organization into these different businesses that you both run?
Yeah. Well, I can speak for me. I don't, again, because we don't work together anymore, so I don't really know. So probably the number one tool that I use is my calendar. I am, if anyone has ever heard me speak about anything anywhere, it is probably about how obsessed I am with my calendar. Not because I need to, like a calendar Nazi, like need to have it perfect all the time, but because I really believe that my values show up on my calendar. And so I put a lot of time and attention as to where I'm spending my time and how I'm being present in that moment with what my intention is for that time. So, yes, am I doing podcast stuff during this time? Am I doing CEO work at this time? Am I with my daughter during this time? Like, am I on a date with my husband during this time? And how am I being present in all? So like my calendar really acts as a backbone to the intentionality of how I'm living my life and giving those things that are important to me time. I use tools like Zoom for all my masterminds, for my podcast interviews, for my, all my client work. I use Google Drive a lot. I'm a little bit of a spreadsheet junkie, so I definitely can get busy doing some fun spreadsheets in there. And then a total non-tech tool, I journal quite a bit. So I'm constantly sort of intentionally journaling and visioning and using that as a tool to really get clear about what's going on inside of me.
Okay, cool. No, I appreciate that. Thanks for sharing. Are there any specific people or resources that have been helpful to you? These could be coaches, mentors, books, courses, events, anything along those lines that you feel like recommending?
Yeah, I would say just in the past year, a couple that come quickly to mind that I've really invested time and dollars into. Rachel Cook has become a good friend of mine. She helps support women entrepreneurs, and she is just somebody whose wisdom I value, because she really thrives on like, don't make business too hard. Like, be really simple. Like, simplify your business. It doesn't have to be complicated, or get out of the hustle. And I just really resonate with that. So she has a signature course, and I've participated in that. And I just really love what she's all about and what she teaches. Denise Duffield Thomas is another one. I've been a member of her Money Bootcamp for a long time. That's all about learning money mindset and sort of getting out of the way of your own money blocks, to help you reach what you really want to reach and what is totally yours to have in this world. Oprah's Super Soul Conversations has been a big, important educational tool in my life right now. Just It's like soul food. So it's kind of gets out of the business brain, but more into the like, why am I here and how am I fulfilling my purpose here through all of these things that I'm involved in and I give my time to. Those are the three that just kind of come off the top of my head.
Okay, cool. Is there anything that's part of your routine, like a habit or an activity, something you keep consistent that you feel contributes to your success as an entrepreneur?
Yes. And it's also funny that you're asking me this now because I'm completely out of my routine right now. and such is what I love talking about, which is like, I love routine. I thrive on routine. But there are seasons when I'm totally out of routine and things just aren't working anyway anymore. So I just kind of need to find a new one. A typical routine though, that has worked for me very well over this past year is waking up at least an hour or so before my household wakes up and just spending some time with myself. Generally, that means meditating, journaling. Sometimes just being in that process will get me real creative into some creative writing. And just spending that time getting really in touch and listening to myself and this inner person that's here constantly trying to talk to me and lead me and tell me what the next step is and giving me clarity about what's going on. And then working out is a big one for me. I'm currently trying to find the new pattern for that too. But generally speaking, you know, I'm a pretty regular athlete. And so I really try to stay physically active, even at the least, if it's just kind of like a walk during a lunchtime. So just something to constantly keep my body moving. That's part of keeping my mind moving and keeping everything else in check. And then my husband and I have a date night once a week and sometimes more, but at least once a week. And that is vital. And even on those date nights where we're completely angry at each other and we're yelling at each other, especially since we've had a kid, it has just proven to be a habit that and a forced time to really connect with each other. And sometimes it's like mind-blowing, oh my God, I totally fell in love with you all over again. And sometimes it's like, meh, okay, like we barely even talked and that's okay. But like we're here with each other, right? So that has been pretty instrumental and it definitely a regular habit that contributes to the overall things that are happening in my life.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So I'm curious, if you could think back to when you were first getting started in business prior, just earlier in your career, do you remember how you defined success then? And if that definition has changed, what would it be today?
Oh, that's such a good question. Yes. I defined it much like most people define it. Can I create a business doing something that I love, making me enough money to live the life, well, to replace my income, because that's where I was coming from, right? And then really the mini step beyond that was the multimillionaire, right? I want to be a multimillionaire because that's success. And what I kind of clung on to over the years after that was that in order to get that level of success, I had to hustle, 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 never sleep, and sacrifice everything and anything in order to achieve that. And what I've learned over all these years is that that's not actually true, nor is it really the guarantee for success. And most importantly, I've had to re-ask myself that question, like, what is my version of success? This has definitely changed since I've become a mother, because I really have seen that my level of success or my version of success is not, I absolutely do believe in monetary success in the sense that I believe in this equation called when I am truly in touch with my gift and giving that gift to the world, that it, one of the ways that the world will tell me it gets value out of that gift is to transact money with me. So I will see the financial rewards of that, right? So it's not money for the sake of money. It's money for the sake of it being one way of telling me that I'm doing a good job giving that gift to the world. So it's meant that I have the freedom of time. I have the freedom to kind of do what I want when I want. I have the freedom to be with my daughter. I have the freedom to go to the beach when I can and want to. I have the freedom to spend time with my husband. I have the freedom to fly back to Arizona and go hang out with my family as often as I want to. I have the freedom to shift and change and listen to myself and allow my intuition to guide where I want to go and not feel stuck in what I have created so that I can continue to evolve in my gifts and how I'm showing up. And it's that. And have the financial rewards that come along with that. Obviously, you know, I need food and shelter, and those are very real things. But it's, you know, the success is more about internally feeling fulfilled and that I'm contributing in all the different areas of my life that are important to me, and not just business. The irony is that the longer I've been in business, the more I've realized that my definition of success is less about the business itself and more about the holistic version of me in this world.
That's a great perspective. Thanks for sharing that. Well, Katie, on that note, I want to thank you again for being so generous with your time today. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate you sharing your story and all these valuable insights. And on that note, if our audience wants to get in touch with you, learn more about what you're doing, bizwomanrock.com, is that the best place that we can direct them?
Yes, it is. And if you are female listening to this in business, sorry, guys. well, you know, bizwomanrock.com is open to absolutely everybody. But if you want to participate in the free group on Facebook, that is bizwomenrock.com/group.
Perfect. Well, Katie, thank you so much, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Tyler. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to the Influence and Scale podcast. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And for show notes, links to resources mentioned, or to learn about how our agency can help you implement a profitable content marketing strategy, visit influenceandscale.com/podcast.